got action. We 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 got woo. We got action. We got action. We got woo. We got action. Now, we got action. We got woo.
You are now tuned in to Intellectually Petty Radio. Hey, yo, Jobs. We got action, homie.
And you are now tuned into another episode of Intellectually Petty Radio, brought to you by M3S3 Clothing. Men make moves and suckers stand still. And as always, on the mighty, mighty, mighty Nerve DJs Radio Network. Y'all already know, man, we only rock with legends around here. And today is absolutely no exception. We got the Trap Queen's own, the author, owner of, let me get this right, of the House of Rose. Author of The Bounce Back, The Queen of Shoplifting. Interesting. Let's get into it. We got the wonderful Miss Tiffany Rose. How you doing, Queen?
Hello, how are you?
Oh, I feel so more comfortable now. Hi. How you doing? How's your family?
I'm good. And you?
I'm all right. You know, I woke up this morning. That's all I can ask for. Oh,
that's right.
Yo, where are you from, first off?
Detroit.
Okay, what side?
West side of Detroit.
Okay, I'm from 7 Mile in Southfield, West Side, okay. Alder.
Okay.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Shoplifting?
Yeah.
what was the first thing that you in, like, I remember when I was like 5, I accidentally stole some shit. But what was the first thing that you set out to, you left the house with the intention to take?
As a kid, I was good.
Really?
Yeah. As a kid, I was my mother's perfect child. So, I was a good kid. We were poor, so my mother was on food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I wanted something from the store, I would just get a book of my mother's food stamps. It was like, you had like one set of food stamps that had like $7 or something in it.
Yeah.
And I'll say, Mom, you know, can I, you know, take me and my friends to the store, you know, whatever, you know, because back then chips was 25 cents. You can get candy, all that other pickle, all that other stuff. So, So I never took anything when I was a kid.
So at what point do you get to okay, you know what? I'm about to just go. I ain't paying for this shit.
It was a store called Hudson's at the time.
Oh yeah. Northland?
I only said that because, you know, I don't, you know who's watching you or however. It turned into the buyers from Macy's came in. Well, Marshall Fields and then Macy's. But originally, it was Hudson, and when I turned it into a job was like Hudson's, but originally when I first started stealing, I worked at a store called Contempo back in the day. And like a hip urban type style store. And I would hook my friends up, I should say. You know, I never like took it out the store. I just, you know, y'all come in here, y'all act like y'all buying this little cheap t-shirt or however. And, you know, I'm gonna fill your bag up and we will split the stuff when I get home. So yeah, so
that's love right there.
I was about 19 years old then.
Oh my God. I remember I went to high school with this guy. I ain't gonna say his name, but he worked at a Foot Locker.
Okay.
And this nigga would come to school, like you would put your order in, and this nigga would come to school with bags, like garbage bags of gym shoes. They were stealing so bad at this Foot Locker that they from what I heard, they stole like $1 million worth of shit out this one Foot Locker.
The reason why I believe that, because that is like that's really something that can really like happen. Like you can really make that much money doing different things like that. So yeah, I believe it.
What's something you stole that held some sentimental value? Like I stole when I was in college, I stole a polo shirt. And okay. Man, you couldn't tell me that this polo shirt didn't have like the real polo guy on. Like I was so proud of this shirt that I stole. I wore that shirt into the fucking ground.
Oh God. What was something that I stole that had sentimental value that I held on to?
That you kept for yourself.
It was probably a fur.
Nigga, you stole a whole fur?
Oh, we ain't even got into it yet, but yes. The only reason why I feel free to talk about these things is because I've already been convicted of it already.
And the only reason I'm asking you, because I see you on BET talking about it. So, I feel it. But how the fuck? A whole fur?
Oh, yeah. Furs.
Nick.
Yeah. I have friends like when I was doing that, I was with a guy that he worked in corporate America,
mm-hmm.
for one. So where he was making like a few hundred thousand dollars already, that was a sales job per se. So it was, if you didn't work, you didn't eat.
Right.
So it was like times where he was up and down.
Yeah.
So I think that's where like it kicked in because I was 23 years old when I built the house from the ground up. So I had to maintain this quote unquote lifestyle. So a lot of things, I don't really think I held on to, I would say a fur, but I don't really think I held on to anything like that held like a sentimental value. When I would get things, to like give to family or like all my friends had furs. All my friends had purses and things like that. Like when I knew somebody's birthday was coming up, I made sure before Chanel got like ridiculous, they had it. You know, so, and that was, you know, over 20 some odd years ago, almost 30 years ago. So, you know, when I was doing things, I think only thing that I think the sentimental value was is like how I treated the people around me.
Okay.
I always, that's what I think held like a sentimental thing to me that even still to this day, they can say, Tiff, remember you gave me this? And I'm like, that's 20 years old, you know. So that's what I think, even though it's wrong, but I think that's what holds the sentimental value.
What did you get back? Was it worth it?
I think it's made me the woman that I am today.
Okay.
I don't, would I do it all over again? Sometimes I say yes, sometimes I say no. Only because I think when I say no, it's because of me going in and out of jail or officially going to prison, getting another case after I had came home from prison that could have put me in prison for like 15 years, or longer. The aspect of, hell yeah, I would do it again, because I think it taught me how to work. The drive, the hustle.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think I got that from. I was truly a person that, like I said before earlier, we were poor. And I remember wearing the same thing every day. So I would get a couple of dollars from my mother or however, and it was a store called Rainbow back then. I think they're still open.
I think so.
A place called 579 and some other stores or whatever. And, you know, I get like a little shirt or something. So I would, you know, take some things and like kind of switch it up. I would probably wear the same pants, but I would switch up the top. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, I had a mindset that I didn't give a fuck how I got it. I was not wearing the same thing twice.
I feel you on that, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I was not wearing the same thing twice. You was not going to catch me. Now I do. I don't care. But mentally, it was a mental thing. Like, people don't understand, like, when you shoplifting is an addiction. Fraud, all that, all those different things are addictions. They don't really have the help to help people like myself, people that do paper crimes, things like that. They have help for people that have alcohol problems or gambling problems or sex problems or whatever. But you never really hear like a Shopaholics Anonymous. It is out there, but it's rare.
Yeah.
So for me, I think that's something that they probably need, you know, with all the hacking and the cyber stuff and the fraud and things like that that's going on, because you make so much money doing fraud. You can make so much money doing fraud, it becomes an addiction. So even if you make a lot of money and you spend a lot of money or however, you always got this mindset. If you're a hustler, you always got this mindset like, oh, shit. Fuck that.
I'll get it again. Yeah. And that you know what? That's the downfall. Like the successful people I've known over the years in the streets, it wasn't the money, it wasn't the violence. They were more addicted to the hustle than whatever product they were selling. The fiends were addicted to that product.
Yeah.
And that was their problem. I knew a guy, he quit. He was seven figures in. He was life was great, but he couldn't mentally get out of the lifestyle he had accumulated and lost it all.
Yeah. I've been poor, rich, wealthy, poor. I've lost it all, gained it back, became rich again. It is something that for a minute, I brought it into my own physical business that I have now. Mm-hmm. And the drive that I have for years, I've been doing the clothing now for almost 15 years now. Mm-hmm. And I think about 10 of those years, I packaged thousands of orders by myself, became a millionaire off of doing it by myself, because mentally I felt like nobody can work like me. Nobody.
I feel you on that. So wait a minute, you didn't bounce back legally with the same drive, the same hustle, and still made the bag.
And still made it, yeah.
You got kids?
Four.
Oldest, how old?
The oldest will be 30 at the end of this month. The next one is 19. The next one is 18. The next one is 17.
Okay, so yeah, because I think my oldest is like 32, 33. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Jennifer. I'll do the math later.
I'll be 48 this year.
I'm 52. So I'm a few light years ahead of you, but. And Lord knows you look way, but Jesus Christ, I'm over here looking like Santa and you look like you 35, 25. I don't know.
Thank you.
Did your oldest, was that, having your oldest, did that help you stop? Or was that more of a motivator to go harder?
No, it pushed me to go hard. I had a family member one time because I was, When somebody calls me a booster, I wasn't a booster. I learned the craft on how to take the items that I did get and I flipped it and turned it into money. You know how when you go to the barber shop or you go to the hair salon and you got the people coming in, they selling clothes, they selling cologne and stuff. Yes. I never had to do that. Never. I never had to do that. I always felt like the effort and the mindset that I had to change a receipt or to overturn the system to get the money, I could have been on Wall Street somewhere. And for me, when I did things for my household, I would get so much stuff that I can flip it and turn it into money. And on top of that, we looking good too. So when I had one family member say to me, she just really thought I was materialistic. And really, in actuality, I wasn't. I like nice things, don't get me wrong. But she thought I was materialistic because every time I came over, I had a Chanel or it was different. Or I had different color handbags and shoes and all type of furs and coats. And not only was I looking good, my children were looking good too. Or then when you came to my house, it was like, oh my God, you should be an interior decorator. You should do this. You should, and you know. And I think more so because of what I put out, I always wanted my children to have better. My children have never grown up in the hood like I have. Never. So that was my mindset to want better for them. I had to. Because I never wanted them to either go what I went through, and I definitely didn't want them to live like how I lived. We were clean, but still have mice and roaches. You know what I'm saying? You know, so I just never want my kids to experience that. I did.
I understand that completely. Yeah. Okay, so you said you went to prison. Mm-hmm. When you got caught, that led to going to prison. Did you think you were going to get away? Or did you know, okay, this is the one?
I knew it was it.
How long did you do?
Just 2 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What was the first day in prison? What was that like?
I'll go back to jail because if anybody is going to jail, hurry up. And they know they're going to prison. Hurry up and go through that part. Get out of jail and go on to go to prison. Because jail time was a mess. That was some hard time. And I know for me, I used to say, oh my God, I just want to do my time in jail because they take a couple of months off a year. If I did 10 months, they like, girl, please, you want to go to prison, you know? And I was in there with people that had been in and out, in and out. Mm-hmm. But I never regretted it. I got into prison that first day. I cried one time because I had left my sons when they were small. They were babies when I left them. So I cried one time, but everything was in order. I signed over power of attorney. I took everything that was supposed to be done. My children never went into the system. They were taken care of. Stuff did happen, you know, at home or however, but for the most part, my children were still together. So I never, by the time I got to prison, I never regretted it. I actually looked up to God and I told him, I said, Lord, thank you. Thank you. Because for the amount of monies and things that I had taken, I should have gotten like 15 to 20 years.
Yo.
So that's where my faith and trust in God, even from the time when they pulled me over and they got me, and I never was sloppy. I had all type of evidence in the car. And this one particular day, I got evidence in the car, you know, of what I was doing to change receipts and things like that. And however, and I'm like, well, God, I guess this is it. So I knew it wasn't no coming back from that.
So was they following you like for a while, or did they just get lucky?
They were watching me for like about a year or so.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, they were watching me for about a year or so. So, you know, like just, you know, the thing was, like, even in court, they pretty much thought that I worked for these companies just because I knew how to manipulate the system to get the money back. So my charges was first degree retail fraud, uttering and publishing. I was upset. I was truly upset about the uttering and publishing because uttering and publishing, if you look it up, that's, you know, mostly if they pertain that to, like, if you write bad checks.
Oh, okay.
But what they did was they put uttering and publishing on me because when I would walk into a store and I would take a receipt and I'm saying, okay, I'm returning this fraudulently, then I'm signing my name. You know how when they give you the slip, when you return something, you sign your name.
Yeah.
Me signing my name or a fake name or however was uttering and publishing.
And they got away with that shit, huh?
Yeah, they got away with it. And on top of that, the original crime, because I had gotten in trouble again, so that's what sent me to prison. I had a first degree child endangerment. I became a second habitual. So pretty much if I was to right now walk into a CVS and steal a pack of gum and get caught, go through the courts, they're going to look at my record.
They're going to enhance that shit.
This bitch, she just do the fuck she want to do. Oh, okay, we're going to give her 20 years off a pack of gum, all because of my past history.
Okay, so when you get out, are you like, okay, I'm done? Or, you know what, I'll just get better at it?
Oh, I came home, sat around for a second, talked to this guy that was a family friend to my best friend. And he, you know, liked me and moved me and my kids into one of his houses and gave me a car and right out the gate, you know, right out the gate. And me, I ain't never had a nigga take care of me. Never. I had one guy maybe do something like later on in life or something like that, but just a nigga just taking care of me, no. I've had all my friends that had guys do shit for them. But yeah, when he would like, I would say like $100 me to death, $20 me to death, I'm like, oh, hell no, nigga, I know how to get this money. And I did. I went back.
Oh, man. And you had, but you didn't have to.
Didn't have to, but I knew I wanted more. And I knew I did not want, I just wasn't accustomed to somebody. I was married before and he never took care of me, you know. So I just, that was just me. It was just in me. Like I said, it goes back to what I said. It's an addiction. It's an addiction.
I'm just curious, though. I don't know. Got nothing to do with distilling or anything. When the guys take care of you, is that a bonus for that guy, or is he setting himself up for failure?
If a guy was to take care of me?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Really, in actuality, I don't know. Like, I have a man now, you know, whatever, but we do things together, right. You know, so it's not a taking care of type thing because we're a team trying to, you know, work together. But I have been in a relationship before where a guy was intimidated. Definitely. Definitely intimidated.
How does that work? Like,
as a woman, you know, I think I'm very, very humble, very, and very kind, giving, you know, I love people, but then I love my people. So I think a lot of times I probably have been a sugar mama. In a sense.
You gotta be funny. No.
I ain't doing that shit no more, but you know. But no, but it's just like when a man souls into a woman, like if she comes to our man and she's like, babe, I want to open a boutique. I want to sell hair. I think I want to go back to school. And she doesn't have the money for it. And her man is like, oh, okay, yeah, babe, shit, whatever you want to do. If he's supportive, he's like, yeah, babe, you know, whatever you want to do.
That's a gift and a curse, though, especially nowadays, because women will then get successful and leave your ass.
That's true, too. But how about when the woman wants to stay and you tell me you want to, you know, open a weed spot and all this other stuff. Yes, I'm putting it out here, but I ain't just gonna say no names. But you want to open a weed spot, and then I look up and I didn't talk to my tax person, and I didn't gave a nigga about $180,000 just to try to do some shit, and nothing ever went.
Oh, yeah. That's beyond the sugar mama. Damn.
So that's where I say, next time we got to work together. It's gonna be teamwork, because you're not just going to keep coming to me and thinking, oh, okay. And then once I really start to realize, because I'm thinking, oh, okay, yeah, you can make this happen because, you know, yeah, because I'm making this money over here and you can do this and you can do that. And then.
It took you that much money to realize that nigga wasn't good at selling weed?
No, it wasn't even about the weed. It was about the getting it together. You know, like you got a place and you building out walls, you buying the lights, you buying the fans, you doing.
Okay, I got what you're saying.
You see what I'm saying? So yeah. It's like, you know, oh, Tiffany, yeah, the light's like $12,000. You know, I got like, you know, $2,000. So I'm, yeah, dumbass. Yeah. I don't care because it's a lesson learned, because honey, so whoever watching this, you want to laugh at me? Yeah. I know some of y'all hoes been did some shit like that too.
Oh my yo, nigga, I got two bands. Can I get? Can you give me 10?
If my mama was living, she'll call him a male gigolo.
Oh my god!
I'm just keeping it real with you. I'm just letting you know that's how it is.
You know what? I'm not mad at that though. I think that, and I was talking to my last guest, Elise King. We were talking about hopeless romantics. And I think that sets you up for failure.
It does.
Because then you fall in love with the dream of love.
The look.
And the reality of the motherfucker you picked to put in that spot never equals up to the vision you had.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Next thing you know, you're $200,000 light and this nigga's still broke. Oh my god, damn.
Yes, I'm telling you, that's how, yeah. And it's like that. I promise you, it's like that. Come on now, how many women you know put cars in their name for a nigga?
Oh, that's a lot.
You see what I'm saying? Like, you hear that all the time. Yeah, you do. I put this nigga on my credit card to build his credit up and all this other stuff. Come on now, you know you done heard of that being.
Yeah, but the problem with that is that 99% of the stories I've heard on men and women, myself included, we fly past the red flags. You see the motherfuckers, they be all on the side of the road, big ass red flags.
Yeah.
And you just roll right past the motherfuckers because you see greener pasture 600 miles ahead.
To your guess, I'm God fearing, honey. So what's crazy is until I go through the stuff, I end up sitting back crying like, God, I heard you. I heard you, God.
Okay. I want to make sure we touch on this topic too.
Okay.
And switch gears a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Stage 3 cancer survivor.
Yes.
What made you go to the doctor in the first place?
So my sister was turning 50 years old that year in 2014, and we were planning a 50th surprise birthday party for her.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually on the phone with my brother-in-law, and I'm sitting at my dining room table, and I went to stretch. When I stretched, I don't be just touching my chest, you know, whatever, especially on the phone with my brother-in-law, you know.
That's definitely not a grab a titty moment. But
like I said, you know, I believe and I trust in God, and I truly believe that was God, you know, allowing me to do that. Because like I said, I just don't do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the phone as well. So when I went to stretch, I must have felt something to even make me do that.
Yeah.
So when I felt the knot, my daughter was in the living room and I said, Tiana, come here. And so I hurried up and got off the phone with my brother-in-law and I raised my arm again. I was like, feel this, feel it. And she was like, oh, mom. She was like, we gotta go to the doctor. Sure enough, that Monday came and I went in for just an examination. He didn't feel anything. He said, so I'm going to send you to get a mammogram, a biopsy, the needle biopsy. The needle is like about that long that they got to stick in you and pull some tissue out just to see if it's cancerous or whatever. And I have a history of cancer in my family, so I had to go to these other doctors and everything. So all that stuff took like about a month before I actually knew what it was. So when I did first get diagnosed, they said it was stage one. So we were fine with that. With all that other testing and everything, because my mother had breast cancer. My mother who always used to be like, it seemed like when they're trying to cure you, it's killing you damn near, you know. And it seemed like I was going through all these different tests and everything. And sure enough, it turned into stage 3B to where it was getting ready to approach 4. So it has spread with all that tucking and pulling and all this other. They just aggravate and it just spread. But that's what made me, like I said, it was still a good month before we even really knew anything. But I cried one time and I was on the phone with the family member I was just telling you about and my sister and everything. And I was trying to cry, I should say. Mm-hmm. And she was like, girl, please, I know you ain't about to cry. She was like, honey, we serve a great God and you gonna be just fine. And 10 years later, here I am. It was 11 years ago, but I'm a 10-year cancer survivor.
Yo, shout out to your sister.
Yeah, definitely. Shout out, Lisa. Hey, girl.
Man, not too many people take that approach.
Yeah. I really, my family used to say I was the healthiest looking, sickest person that they ever seen in their life.
So did you end up going through chemo?
Yeah, I lost my hair and everything. The first picture that's on my page, I have it pinned on there when I hit my 10 years or however. I have like a collage of like pictures. So yeah, honey, I was bald headed and fine, honey. Yes, and flat chested and everything. I was fine, boo. I was fine.
Hey, the bald headed look is a good look for some women.
Yeah, but you know how my hair was, I would make you laugh. So you know those men that have wrinkles in their hair.
You had the wrinkles?
Oh. I got like this soft. You told me to, you know, be myself. I'm a whole core boss.
Oh my God. Oh, wait. So, are the wrinkles like up top or are they in the back?
In the top.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Honey, I made my daughter a lot of money, honey, with the wig she was making me back then.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. I was like, honey, slap them on. Or I wear like these little turbans or whatever. Oh, honey, I went to get my medication, honey. Fly, so I get out. Oh, yes, honey. Yeah, I did that. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Wait a minute, your daughter makes wigs?
Yeah, that's a wig right here. The angle of the camera is...
That's a wig?
That's a wig. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I would have never known.
Mm-hmm. Alan Michael virgin hair for all the folks that out there in the podcast land. Shout out to my daughter.
Well, you know what? While we at it, let's give her a plug. Where, if I want to buy my old lady a wig, where would I do that?
Alan Michael. That's my son's name. Alan Michael. AlanMichaele. Virgin hair. at .com or whatever. Yeah. You can find her on Instagram, Tiana Bell on Instagram. Yes.
That's shout out to your daughter. Yo, yeah. I went to Light Up Liver Noise this past weekend.
Oh yeah, my aunt went today. Yeah.
Shout out to Rita. You did phenomenal. Uh-huh. The event was, the whole street was lit. Mm-hmm. I walked into a wig store. And I'm like, they gave me, like, especially like the owner's son, gave me such a history lesson on how the Korean business leaders did sisters and brothers in the hair care industry.
Oh yeah,
and it was, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
I didn't know it was like that.
Oh yeah, yeah, they definitely, it's like a handful of African Americans that own beauty supplies and hair shops, and because the Koreans they infiltrated and they took over. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's infiltrated or we gave it to them.
Probably both.
Yeah,
we probably gave it to them more so. Yeah,
I don't think.
How long our people been doing hair? And,
man,
you know, you got Madam C.J. Walker that invented the pressing comb. You know, man. You know all this. You know, probably just gave it to them. But yeah,
it was a horrible story, man. We're gonna have to revisit that in long form one day. Yeah. Okay, so how do you get to writing the book?
Oh, people just telling me I should write the book. And just, you know, like really, because I was already like kind of like telling my story. Nobody would have knew I went to prison until somebody tried to throw me under the bus one day. Because I at one point in time, I was talking about God so much that I had been through so much in my life. I was just giving honor to him.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't nothing to like grab attention. I never wanted to praise God in private. I always wanted to give him the glory in public.
Wait. Hold on one second, though. Was you giving him the glory when you was, stealing shit?
Oh, honey, yes, I was, because let me tell you. You know how we have to pay our tithes and offering? If you guys have grown up in the church, you pay your tithes and offering, right?
Yeah.
My family has told me the reason why I was blessed was because I would hustle all week, but I would be in church on Sunday. I would calculate the money that I made. I'm not bullshitting. God would strike me down right now. I would calculate what I made. I would even include, I used to, at one point in time, I would include the clothing costs. Like if the tags were on there, I would even add that up. That's just how much money I was making. And when I went to church on Sunday, I would pay my tithes.
You pay your tithes on stolen shit.
I pay my tithes on stolen money.
That's diabolical.
Oh, yeah.
It's nasty work right there. Yeah.
But I feel like God kept me, so I could tell this story.
God looking down like, oh, this nigga is back at it again. Yeah. Not the mink. Get that one too, then, while you at it. I know.
Yeah. Oh, honey, I listen to Jay-Z. Oh, because that was my, you know, shoot. Guys thought I was a drug dealer. It was so, you know, they thought I was a drug dealer. They thought I was a madam because I had a whole bunch of different women around me or whatever that I would go into the bar with, you know, like cashmere coats on.
Yo.
So my friends they dressed cute, but they didn't dress like how I dressed. See, the thing was, it like how they like, you know, talked about me on Trap Queens. I did learn how the rich move. Mm-hmm. I learned how they dress. If I'm, I couldn't walk in Neiman Marcus looking like a hood rat.
Yeah, you had to walk like you belong.
I had to walk like people. I'm not a liar, but I will always like lie. In a sense where people in the store saw my husband was an NFL player at one time. I'm telling you, that's how it was, but I was playing the role to get what I needed so I can, you know, move on and go to the next spot. I really learned that through this movie came out in like the late 90s. Kerry Washington was in it. It was called, I can't even remember the name of the movie, but they ran a shoplifting ring. And that was one of the things that Kerry Washington was telling her crew. Like, you know, when we walk in these stores, we have to look a certain way. We have to wear this. We have to wear Armani and this, that, and the other. We have to carry these $2,000-$3,000 handbags just so they'll know, like, when we walk into the jewelry store, we can, you know, and finagle and do whatever it is we need to do. And they made a lot of money off of that, a lot of money. And that's where I think I kind of was like, if them motherfuckers can do it, I can too. But I did it by myself. I never did it with a ring.
I always like niggas that selling cigarettes. I don't really have no respect for that. But motherfuckers that put time, energy, and effort to the craft of stealing, I got a whole lot of respect for. Like, I've always dreamed of being able to steal like a Picasso or, you know, a Basquiat or some shit in the museum that you, in Tom Cruise movies where I'm floating over the, you know.
Like that movie, The Thomas Crown Affair with Pierce.
Brosnan?
Yeah. Watch The Thomas Crown Affair. Artwork, Mona Lisa's, all the, when I say, like, The Thomas Crown Affair, the movie with Kerry Washington, the Italian Job.
Oh, that was
like
good.
Any of those movies, Ocean's 11, I like gravitated to those. The Thomas Crown Affair is old.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about art and things like that, that was like totally on a whole nother level. And that's where I think I learned how to look and dress a certain way, just because those particular people that I watched in the movies, they carried themselves in a certain type of way. I knew how to talk. When I would take things back, you know, like, so, because at the time when it was Hudson's, and I saw a lady take something back from her wedding, and she said, well, I don't have the receipt or however, and I think they ended up giving her $500-some-odd in cash. So when I saw that, I just happened to be standing behind her. I was buying a gift for somebody for their wedding. And when I saw that, I was like, I know these motherfuckers just didn't give me no $500. So you know what I did? She said, I heard her say it was on her registry. So I went in, maybe like a couple of days later, I registered. I did a wedding registry.
Yo.
I had Wusthof knives. I had, they, like, you could buy a box of, like, Wusthof knives. They can be anywhere between $500 to $1,000. I had those. I had, like, table linens and Vera Wang crystal and Waterford table linens, all type of things. And these were, like, high value items. So I would get comforters that was like $500-$600, down comforters that was like $500-$600. And I would take the first big hit that I took back something, got like, took back a bunch of different things. Walking in the store, didn't have them in my hand. I just walked into a store. I would walk in with certain bags, put stuff in there, and walk up to the register and say, hey, you know, we got this for our wedding. I don't have the receipt. I just, you know, was just trying. I know they're going to give me the money back. I'm, you know, letting them know, like, hey, you know, I mean, if there's something else I can get, if I can't find nothing, what can I do? I knew they were going to give me the money back. My first big hit, they gave me back $2,200.
A comforter, though?
It was a $500 comforter. I had some Wusthof knives. That was like $1,100. Oh, look at that.
How you find out about a Wusthof? Yeah,
look up Wusthof. Look at KitchenAid mixers, $500. You start buying the attachments. You know, I could take back an attachment that's $300. That's what I was doing. And then you think you do that, and I worked it like a job. So when I did it all day long, I could have been and made like about $5,000, maybe $6,000. Probably not all in cash, but I got the merchandise because now I'm getting the merchandise so I can take that shit back the next day and restart all over.
Yes. When is the movie coming out? I need to see this shit like visually. I need to see.
I want Monica to play me. Cause she give me bitch, you know, cause I got like that at one point in time. But I don't know. It's funny that you say that. I have been talking, but I'll leave it right there.
Man, let's get Dennis Reed on line one.
Oh my God. Dennis been trying to get Moolah Films.
I was just about to say Moolah Films next.
Man, he be like, Mom, what's up?
You know, like you really are bullshitting. I'm gonna keep it a buck with you. You are fucking around.
Man, Moolah, shout out to you, shout out to Dennis. Dennis know my story. Like Dennis was there. Like Dennis know it. That's why Dennis like, sis.
Cause it's so unique. Like you could, you know, it's not that many women in the drug game, but it's not, it's not something unheard of.
Right.
You don't hear nobody literally shoplifting their way to seven figures.
That's what I said. I was like 23 years old when we built the house, and the money that was put down on the house was from my illegal money.
That is crazy.
Yeah, we used his.
Favorite mall back in the day.
Favorite mall back in the day.
Yeah.
Northland, Hudson's, Jacobson's. It used to be a store called Jacobson's. Jacobson's used to sell Versace linen. There you go. I ain't even got to say no more.
No, you ain't gonna say shit. But I have been into that Northland Hudson's like a gazillion times, you know, when it was an actual store.
It was easy for me to see the thing with Hudson's at Northland. I used to, Northland and Eastland. Eastland loss prevention was like, I just thought that you have to know what loss prevention looks like anyway, if you're doing what I was doing. But Eastland's loss prevention was so scandalous. It was like, I got down on them so bad. I'm like, I should have been got caught with them. But Eastland and Northland was the places that I would steal these high ticket items from so I could take them back to Somerset, Oakland Mall. And the thing was, I made all this money just in the state of Michigan. I was never a traveler. I never went to Ohio, Chicago, all those other places like a lot of people do. I think it, and I only really think it was because I learned how to work the system to get the money back. So I think that was the difference between me and so many people. I've never heard of anybody that did what I did, like even down to how I changed things so I can get the money back. I've never heard of it before. And anybody that has been in that game, because I knew a lot of boosters and things, they even knew. And they said, damn, bitch, I would have never thought of that.
Yeah, your shit is some otherworldly shit there.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to visualize how the fuck you still a mink, though.
Like, oh, man. Stealing a mink. Now, I know some people that can steal minks. But how I would get furs, here we go, back to like Hudson's and Marshall Fields. If I wanted it, I would, you got to remember, I was making a lot of money too. But a lot of that, of how I was getting them, I was buying them, but I was using their money to get
it. Yo. You could, yeah, you didn't fucking around and I don't even know what to call it. Like you have reached master level. You need to teach a class or some shit.
I had two different places that like their security or loss prevention that wanted me to work their, you know, security, because they say that I wasn't the typical thief.
And you would spot everything.
They're stuck on the crackhead,
yeah,
bum ass motherfucker coming in a store stealing, and nobody is like quote unquote sophisticated like how I was coming into a store taking something.
You ever been in the store and catch somebody else stealing that gets, yeah, away with it, and you just, it's in the back of your head, you're like,
oh, I mean, like, you dumb motherfucker, you fucked that up.
Oh, you be, so wait a minute, you critical of them?
I'm critical of them. Yeah, I saw somebody trying to take something back that I literally like saw them take it, and it was just so sloppy, and I'm like, you dumb bitch, you know. Oh yeah, I'm critical. Yeah, just the other week, me and my daughter, we went to, but they, you could tell these people were on drugs, so I had to go on CVS. I think I had to get a card for somebody's birthday or something, and it was these two, it was a man and a woman. This man had a bag, like a purse, like one of the soft drink bags. And so I see him take the deodorant. But when I came around the corner, you know, he's trying to put it back, you know, whatever. Next thing you know, I go, I get whatever it was I need. I got to walk back past him. This nigga then hightailed it off the store with this bag full of shit. He got shit all up in his bag. I was like, what the fuck? And then here she is. So I get in the car. My daughter, you know, she just on her phone. I'm getting in the car, whatever. I was like, I give this to something. She was like, I see something like all up in his back. I was like, girl, it's in his back. It's in his, that purse he carried. And here come the lady.
And I don't get it. Like, the money that, like, what's the most you can make out of a fucking CVS doing shit like that?
But like I said, you know, nothing against them. You know, everybody, you know, they, you could tell they were on something, you know. I really felt bad for them because I was like, I could have bought that for you. But what they were doing, they got so much stuff that day. I saw it with my own eyes. They got so much stuff that day. All they were doing was going to sell it to try to get some drugs. They weren't doing nothing but getting like a dollar or something from somebody.
Exactly.
Yeah, but to get some drugs. So I really, that, I laughed about it, but as I was pulling off, I said, thank you, God, you know, that, you know, I was never at that low of a point.
You know what? I have to echo that sentiment, because I have never been, you know, I've never been poor. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I ain't never been rich either. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like I've had, you know, family members that were poor, poor, poor. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I knew the difference between, you know, the struggle, mm-hmm, and me just being a spoiled ass brat about, mm-hmm, shit. So I got to thank God for that, too.
Yeah.
If people want to get in touch with you, how do they go about doing that?
I'm on Instagram. It's __ Tiffany Rose. That's TiffaniI. Rose, like the flower, RLSE, __. The business name is the House of Rose Collection. I'm on Instagram, on Facebook, I'm Tiffany Rose. On TikTok, I'm Tiffany Rose. On Snapchat, I'm Tiffany Rose. So y'all will find me with, yep, my many hairstyles. So just pick one, that's me.
I still don't believe that's a wig. I kind of want to, like, I, yes, wish I could just kind of.
Yes, this is a wig. My hair is short. Look at you. You got me.
Hey, don't blame that shit on me.
I got to tweak it a little.
I got $2,000. Let me get 10 for this this airplane I'm building in the backyard.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Oh my God. I want to thank you tremendously. This has been a phenomenal conversation. And I damn sure not going to forget this.
Don't be calling Dennis to nobody because he going to be like, sis.
You know what? I might just have to send him a clip. I mean, seriously though, like you really, 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 really need to that. One of the two. Because it got to be somebody from Detroit to really tell
now
the story.
Now, you already know. I done had people send stuff. My daughter, I done had other people like try to send stuff to 50 Cent and stuff like that. And I'm like, if I can just, because that is something that I just don't want to like jump into. I probably think that's why. Because, you know, I had the producers like ask me, you know, like, hey, you know, because I know some women from Trap Queens that end up getting their movies and things like that. But I know when you're working with a certain budget, I just want it to be as, even if I got to play my own damn self, because I can't really see.
There's a sister I think that would play you phenomenally. Oh, damn, I can't remember her name. She's, and I interviewed her too. I'm sorry I'm having a brain fart, but she was in the movie Crush. And actually, she's like a really kind of, like in real life, a very, very God-fearing woman.
The only person that I would probably think of, like, besides Monica, this girl named Nunu, I think she could play me. Just because she, beautiful girl, you know, probably not as thick as me or whatever, but she can play me or whatever. I think that she's a really good, great actress. She's a really great actress. And I think she can do the facial expressions and things like that. Like all I would have to do is just like kind of like, you know, show her. I think for me, it's the, because so many people think that, you know, think of Booster, they thinking I'm taking it, like I said, and going to the salons, doing stuff, selling out stuff out the trunk of my car, and I wasn't. So like I said, you know, just the whole way that I, you know, did the changing things around so I can get the money, I would need, that's one part that I would need to have somebody get down pat.
Definitely. Yeah, the whole, yeah, yeah.
Because that was the whole premise of how I was able to make so much money, you know, so.
Definitely yeah. A more emotional actor than the physical.
Yeah. I'm with you on that.
And yo, when you do, I know you're going to need like a fat old security guard. Hit your boy up. I got you.
Yes. I got 20 brothers, honey, so they're gonna be like, who is this nigga?
Like, bro, I don't want no smoke. I'm just in the fucking movie, man. Relax.
I like that, but then they're
right here. Oh my goodness, man. I'm gonna let you go ahead and get out of here. This I truly, truly, truly appreciate you for stopping by. Well, thank you. I would agree.
I was trying to be classy and ghetto at the same time.
you were phenomenal. I don't know if there's anything if there's anything I could possibly do for you, but if so, let me know and I got you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. This was nice. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Shout out to Rita.
Okay. Right. Yes, my boo. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Rita. Anyway.
You did.
We out of here.
Okay.
Y'all have a good one. Peace. Yo, y'all already know, man, it's been another episode of Intellectually Petty Radio. This is your host, Jobs. Please make sure that you like, subscribe, and share the show. Yo, we are putting up Wilt Chamberlain numbers on the fan page on Facebook. We done got 50,000 fans in the last 3 months alone. We got over 75,000. Next stop is a million. Hook your boy up. Anyway, it was a great combo. Shout out to you, Rita, for putting Rita be knowing. You know, she's a savant. She just be, you know. If you got, oh, and if you got, you got any interview requests or business propositions, look up the lady with the golden ear anywhere. And that's my manager right there, Rita. On that note, we out of here. Wait a minute, hold on. Who do we have next week? Let me look at the schedule and see who we have. Okay, we got Prentice Powell at 5 o'clock. Oh, and Brian Brown at 7 o'clock. So we'll be back. I'll holler at you. Peace. Y'all have a good one.